This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joyful, joyful.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
Good evening, faithful listeners, and welcome to the Spirit Lounge. We've got myself, Claudine, here tonight with Rachel doing a double shift on the panel.
I sure am, so I hope you're not sick of my lovely voice.
And finally, we haven't even given her a break yet. And no Mark tonight, unfortunately. He's indisposed, but he'll be back next week, I do hope.
Yes, we do hope. So today is St. Patrick's Day, and we have an accidental Irish theme for the program. Patrick was a missionary sent from Britain to Ireland, and he's one of the patron saints of Ireland, along with Saint Bridget, whom we'll hear more about later in the program. So are you decked out in green today? Are you ready to drink some green beer and try your best Irish leprechaun accent? Well,
I don't do accents. That's,
oh, come on.
That's embarrassing. But you've got your green hair.
I do. It's well, it looks green at the moment. It's somewhat aquary, mouldy coloured. So who is this St. Patrick? We're always talking about these fancy people who get celebratory days named after them. So most people think that today is just a celebration of Irish settlement and culture in Australia, considering they were amongst the first Europeans to settle in Australia. However, most of us don't know who the heck St. Patrick actually is and why he got a name. A day named after him. Turns out March 17th is the day that the patron saint, the patron saint of Ireland died. So it was only fitting to make an official feast day of St. Patrick. So St. Patrick's Day originally was made a feast day in the 17th century and commemorates St. Patrick and the arrival of Christianity in Ireland. So time for the time warp. Much of what is known about St. Patrick is in the Declaration, which is allegedly written by Patrick himself. He was the son of a preacher man and the grandson of a priest in the Christian church. It is widely believed that at the age of only 16, young Paddy was kidnapped by Irish raiders and taken as a slave to Gaelic Ireland. He spent 6 years working there as a shepherd and is believed that this is where he found the Lord. The declaration says that God told Patrick to flee to the coast, jump on a ship that would be waiting for him to take him home. Then he returned home and went on to become a priest. Eventually, he returned to Ireland to convert the pagan to Christianity, and it is believed that he converted thousands. Over time, many stories of St. Patrick grew, and he therefore became Ireland's most foremost saint. So in Australia, obviously, we like to take the non-religious parts of the St. Patrick story and make it our own celebration by celebrating Irish culture with food, drink, leprechauns, wearing green, and listening to a good old Irish pub band throw in a parade for good measure. But it's worth taking the chance to learn about some Irish history and culture, though. So happy St. Paddy's Day, Spirit Loungers.
I'm sure there's a Gaelic greeting, which I'm not aware of, and I would butcher it if I knew it.
Yeah, me either.
But it's actually a double holy day this week. You can keep celebrating St. Patrick's Day for a few more hours. And I think we
haven't done the song, and I'm not going to sing this week because...
We have a special song. It's a miracle that we found our holiday theme again. It was lost and it's found.
In case you were sick of my singing voice.
It was more unexpected, more surprising. You never knew what was going to come out.
Exactly.
So I think we're all honorary Irish men and women today, though I did see on Facebook that one of my friends with Scottish heritage was a bit unsure about that. So, well, we can all be honorary Celts today, perhaps. But after today, this Sunday, things get a bit more serious. This Sunday is Palm Sunday, which is the week leading up to Easter. And Christians call this week Holy Week, as it's the most solemn week in the Christian calendar. And it ends in joy and light on Easter morning. Though in Australia, there's not as much light as you might get in the Northern Hemisphere, where this coincides with spring. But, you know, we just take our Northern Hemisphere traditions and celebrate them upside down. Palm Sunday commemorates Jesus' final entry into Jerusalem before he's arrested and crucified. Churches celebrate this day a bit differently from ordinary Sundays. In some traditions, worship on Palm Sunday starts outside the church and moves inside afterwards. It's a kind of reenactment of the two major events celebrated on Palm Sunday, Jesus' entry into Jerusalem and his trial and crucifixion. In the first part, Jesus is said to have ridden a donkey into Jerusalem, and people spread palm leaves in front of him. So there's a lot of tradition and symbolism in there. And I didn't read up on the donkey, which I'm sure there's plenty of symbolism there as well. But the palms, this is interpreted as a symbol of victory in ancient Roman culture. And we also heard a few months ago that there's palm leaves are used in the Jewish festival of Sukkot. So there's many layers of symbolism there. It's a bit sad that we don't have Mark here to tell us more about the palm leaves in Sukkot. I don't think we had Mark here at Sukkot either. So we'll get to talk to him about Jewish traditions one day.
Yes.
So the first part of the service presents Jesus as a kind of triumphal figure. And in contrast, the rest of it focuses on his arrest, his trial and crucifixion, leading the church into commemorating these events through the rest of Holy Week. So the Bible readings and the acts of worship are set up to make us think about how the supposed triumph at the start contrasts and leads to the crucifixion, and from there on to the resurrection of Jesus, but more on that next week. We're not going to jump the gun too much. So some churches get specific with the reenactment part of the service at the start. The service may start outside the church with the people forming a procession around the church, which can be quite impressive when you've got a large congregation or if the church is located at a large intersection, for example. Some churches even include a donkey in the procession. And I've even seen some where they have a donkey in the procession and then afterwards they have donkey rides for the children. So we're just breaking those rules about not working with animals and children. We'll get them all together. I was once carrying serving in a procession and was told, just step back a bit so that the donkey doesn't kick you. So that was one of my more tense moments. After the procession, the service continues in the church, and the Bible readings center on the Last Supper, Jesus' arrest and trial, and his crucifixion. And yes, in the really committed churches like mine, we're hearing the whole story. So we could be standing up to hear, I counted this just earlier, it was about 170 verses from the Gospel of Luke. I don't think that's an exaggeration. It's the whole story from entering Jerusalem to getting crucified. So that's a lot of Bible reading in one sitting. Because Holy Week is the start of the endurance sport aspects of church worship. So we'll talk about some of the more secular and political aspects of Palm Sunday with our guests. But first, to start off tonight's special Irish playlist, here's One by U2. So we talked about Palm Sunday earlier as the Christian festival. It's one, and it's also one of the few days outside Europe, at least, when the church takes to the streets. Though I think this happens more frequently in Europe, but not so much in Australia. As we heard earlier, Palm Sunday services often start outside the church with a very public procession. Jesus' entry into Jerusalem was a confrontation between different ideas of power, between the Roman Empire and the ideas that Jesus and his followers are spreading. And that tradition continues in a way today in Australia. The peace movement started holding rallies on Palm Sunday to protest the rise of nuclear power. And nowadays, the government's treatment of asylum seekers has become the focus of these rallies. So our special guest tonight in the Spirit Lounge is Sister Bridget Arthur, a member of the Brigidine Order and a founder of the Brigidine Asylum Seeker Project. Welcome, Bridget.
Thanks, Godine.
So let's start with the basics. There's going to be a few rallies around Australia this Sunday on Palm Sunday. So what's it about? What's the message behind the rallies?
Yes, I think there's going to be rallies or walks. We call ours here in Melbourne a walk. In most major cities and indeed in some regional areas on Palm Sunday. The numbers in these events have actually been building year by year over the last decade, I guess, and we expect that many people will turn out on the streets on this Palm Sunday.
So what's who's behind it, or what groups are involved in organising these?
Here in Melbourne, which is the only one I can speak for much in terms of the organisation, there's actually, I think it's 107 different groups who are sponsoring this walk, which is quite amazing. There is, of course, a smaller organising committee, but there's a huge number of people, from very large groups to quite small ones.
And are you involved in the organising, the I suppose, the practical side of it?
Yes, I'm on the organising committee.
So I think there seems to be, from my recollection, there's a mix of Christian groups from various denominations, other faith groups, and other groups that are not part of any faith. So is there why is it held on Palm Sunday, which is a very Christian festival?
Yeah, I think Palm Sunday has come to represent in the community at large something that, to represent a time when actually we make some kind of public demonstration about something that appears to be really, really central to us as a nation. And I think it's really good that different people can come on that day from various traditions. We can all come from our own tradition, come with a story of our own, but come in the common ideal of trying to do something for people who are very vulnerable. It seems to me that this really fits into the whole tradition, the whole story of Palm Sunday. And whatever people believe, the story is still the story.
So do you think that Palm Sunday is taking on a more significant more meaning now in Australia, now that there's been these protests of various kinds on the day? It's in a way, it's taken its own life because, you know, things like days like Christmas or Easter have a very specific theological meaning, but they also take on a more secular association. Do you think that's happening with Palm Sunday now?
Yeah, I think it probably is true. I think that sometimes it's good to remind the general community of the whole meaning behind the tradition. You know, people can hear that story and appreciate it for what it is. I mean, I can do that for stories that, or aspects of other faiths, like Judaism or Islam or Buddhism or whatever. And I'm sure that people from those faith traditions and others can do this in terms of Palm Sunday too.
So when I was an undergraduate a long time ago and going on my first protest marches, that this was in the 90s. I think Rachel was born in the 90s.
I was born in
the 90s. So back then I thought of the Palm Sunday rallies as part of peace rallies and an anti-nuclear movement. I think Jabiluka was a big issue at the time. Were you involved in any of those earlier movements?
Yes, I was part of. I was born a long, long, long time before the 1990s, so I've been around forever, and have walked in many, many of those. The biggest one that I can remember is the one protesting the entry into the Iraq War on the part of Australia. That was a huge demonstration of, for peace rather than going to war.
Were there rallies held, like, in every city, or was it everyone went to a particular location in Australia to rally?
I think there have always been bigger or smaller rallies, walks, whatever, around Palm Sunday. Well, as long as I can remember. I've only mainly lived in Victoria, but I have occasionally been present in another state, and there's always been. It's my memory is that they've been slightly smaller, that Melbourne sort of outdoes the others in terms of numbers, but maybe that's not true. That might be a bit parochial.
I feel that we're kind of privileged in Melbourne and having this. It's a very protest-friendly layout, I think, you know, being a grid, and it's easy to kind of plan a map. And especially thinking of Palm Sundays and other peace rallies and other rallies that Christian groups are involved in, there's this very, I think, deep symbol of having, as an Anglican, thinking of having our cathedral opposite Federation Square. You've got this huge church opposite this very public square in one of the biggest intersections in Melbourne. So it's really almost laid out perfectly for a Palm Sunday rally for us.
And for here in Melbourne, where we usually gather, and we are this year, at the State Library, and then we walk down Swanson Street, you know, and it's a perfect place to walk down. I think you walk past the cathedral, which amazingly has the big sign out, "Free the Refugees," out on the wall high up, which is very arresting, and then past Federation Square, past Flinders Street. You know, it's as though here we are, and here's the whole life of Melbourne, kind of symbolised by the trams and the people and the Flinders Street and the cathedral, and then on down past the river. You know, it's an amazing walk, really. It's not all that long, but it's...
And it's down. It's mostly downhill too.
Oh, it is. And that's good.
Where does the walk end?
Down in the gardens, that's a fair way down. I'm not sure. I think they're called the Queen...
Oh, is it the...
Queen Victoria Gardens?
Or is it the Alexandra Gardens?
Alexandra Gardens, that's it. Yeah, that's it.
So I think just across the river.
Yeah, it is.
I only just had that ding-ding moment, but we can go to that after we listen to another song. A little break from our Irish playlist today. That was O Canada by Missy Higgins, who we have found out is actually going to be singing at the refugee rally this Palm Sunday.
And in Melbourne.
In Melbourne. And my little ding-ding moment was... I was actually there at the refugee rally last year at Palm Sunday. For some reason, I hadn't put two and two together prior to that moment. I was there with a great friend of mine from Sydney, Lucas, who is part of a group called People Like Us, who are advocates for refugees in Australia. And if you were there last year and you happened to get some green fairy floss, it was probably me that gave it to you. So I was helping man the fairy floss machine and hand out green fairy floss to people.
That's an even more appropriate this year. If it's just 3 days after St. Patrick's Day, we need the green fairy floss again.
That's true, but I don't know if he'll be there this year, so I'm not sure if there will be green fairy floss. We had a lot of leftover fairy floss, though, so he had to smuggle it back to Sydney on the aeroplane with him. Not smuggle it. He was allowed to take it. It was just, you know, probably heavier than the 5 kilos or whatever that you're allowed.
Fairy floss can't be very heavy.
Oh, it comes in liquid form. Fun fact.
I've never been involved in...
it's also very hot, so you don't want to burn yourself on it. But yeah, it was an incredible experience seeing everyone be together in the park at the end of the rally. There was just such an incredible, uplifting vibe there. And I was actually really pleased that it may have happened, but I did not see anybody who was against refugees there, which was amazing.
But I asked myself this. I don't know if there's an answer, but do either of you think it makes any difference? Because we've been doing this for 15 years or more.
Yes, I think it makes a difference at varying levels. I think it helps all of those who are actually asylum seekers here to know that there are a lot of people who actually want something better for them and who are prepared to do something that's quite tangible to ask the government to change policies and to get something better for them. So I think for the people seeking asylum, it's important. I think for the people who are doing the walking, the non-violent, because I take your point that you didn't see anything that was violent, Rachel, and it's a very peaceful, it's always a very peaceful event, but that in a very peaceful way that we stand in solidarity with these people, I think that helps us to know that there's a lot of other people who are also with us. And so that sense of community is very important. At another level, I hope that both major parties who have implemented policies that are quite cruel, that they will also be watching and saying, well, there are tens of thousands of people now asking us to close detention centres and to be much kinder to people. So maybe, just maybe, they'll also be looking and listening.
I also think that it brings awareness to people as well who aren't as educated about it. There are a lot of people out there who don't watch TV and don't read newspapers and are not fully aware of the situations that are going on. And for them to see this public protest and they can join it, they can meet up at the end, they can get handed a pamphlet, or just talk to someone and say, hey, what's this all about? And for them to then maybe go and tell their friend, hey, today I saw this thing. Did you know that this is happening? And then someone else might go, what? Like, that's happening? And Australia's letting that happen? So it creates awareness as well, which then helps promote change.
And many protests, I think quite legitimately, are people who are looking for something, for justice maybe, for themselves and for people like them. This is, I think, quite different in that it's a group of people who themselves are not, by and large, affected by the fact that people are trying to seek protection here in this country and we've made ourselves kind of refugee-free. But the fact that we can do that and do it for others, I think, is really important.
You're on Joy 94.9 on the Spirit Lounge, where our special guest tonight is Sister Bridget Arthur from the Brigidine Asylum Seeker Project. And I thought I'd ask about the project and what you do the other 364 days of the year too. So I think you were one of the co-founders of the Asylum Seeker Project.
Yes, we began this project back in 2000, and at that stage we naively thought that it would be something that we'd do for a couple of years because then the need would surely be passed. So just how stupid we turned out to be.
16 years. Yeah, well, I don't know if stupid or hopeful or unrealistic.
That's right.
So what?
Yeah, we try to do four things. One, to offer practical assistance to those who turn up here with very little, usually, often having spent a lot of time in detention and who need help in the way of accommodation. So we help with that. Some legal help, which we get through people who do this on a pro bono basis for us, by visiting the detention centres and getting to know people there. Having a program where many volunteers go out into people's homes and teach them English and befriend them, support them, take them out of isolation. We give food out. And so we do, at a practical level, we do quite a lot of stuff. We try to network with other organisations because the strength in that. We try to advocate both for individual people and around issues. And the last thing that we try to do is educate. We do that by newsletters, discussion nights, that kind of thing.
And is the Brigidine Order in Australia, are you just in Melbourne or are you in other parts of Australia?
We're a small congregation and we are here in Victoria. We're in New South Wales, a very small number in Queensland, Yeah, that's about it here in Australia. Yeah.
So there is quite a lot of networking with other groups, not just in your order. Mm. I think there's a lot of rumour and misinformation about how asylum seekers are treated. So can you tell us about if somebody is, I suppose, released into the community, what support, if any, do they get from the government, and what do you have to pick up?
Mm. It's a very good question, because actually there's virtually no one answer to anything when you talk about asylum seekers, because a lot depends on when you came, how you came, who interviewed you, etc. But just talking broadly about the biggest number who are now in the community on what's called bridging visas, and they're there as part of what is also called a legacy caseload, although this is very technical, that's the largest number by far. And they get 89% of new start, and yeah, that's it, really.
And that's pretty, I mean, new start's pretty low to begin with, and that's even, so that's well below the poverty line. Yeah,
and they have to get their housing out of that, pay their utilities, pay for food, pay for expenses for schooling for their children, etc. I mean, sometimes I did the sums with a lady the other day, and because she had a debt she had to pay back for electricity, she virtually had no money left for food, or she had no money left for food. So, you know, unless they can get some help, people like that lady and her two children, then, you know, they're in dire straits.
So are you... do members of your community go out to where people live, or do they come to your congregation?
Mm. By and large, we go to places. For the people in community, the ones that we are looking after are more often families. Many of them are women by themselves, not all, but a sizeable number are. Or sometimes they're people who are quite ill mentally usually. And then sometimes both mentally and physically. They can be very, very isolated. So one of our main aims is to try and get good people of goodwill in the community, and there are many of those, to actually befriend people, because taking them out of that isolation is the first step towards healing and getting them at least able to live somewhat normally.
What, apart from asylum seeker issues, are there other social issues that... that you or that the Brigidines in Australia have been involved in?
Yes, well, primarily we've been teachers, so primarily we've got a background in schools, both primary and secondary, a bit of tertiary. But we've always been interested in social issues as well, and so, you know, over the years we've always had a justice group, and that justice group has taken various issues, including the asylum seekers, prior to when we set up this project. So Indigenous rights and homelessness and a variety of other things that, you know, you're all too aware of.
You're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, where we've been talking to Sister Bridget Arthur from the Brigidine Asylum Seeker Project about the Palm Sunday Walk for Refugees, Walk for Justice for Refugees, which is this Sunday. I've just seen an update on their Facebook page looking at the weather forecast for Sunday. It's perfect protest walking weather, not too hot, not too cold, minimum 12, maximum 21, and sunny. So no more excuses for not taking to the streets and showing your support for asylum seekers. And just getting back to the issue of church involvement in asylum seeker issues, Bridget, I believe you've also been involved in the Love Makes a Way movement. Have you been arrested in an MP's office? Or I think there's, I know quite a few people who've been arrested now.
Yes, I don't think it's any more a badge of honour, because many have been. Yes, I have been, but just as part of groups who have occupied the places of the, what do you call, the outside offices, sort of different members of Parliament. It's just, again, a non-violent way of trying to bring attention to the sheer vulnerability of this group of people in our community.
What sort of reactions have you heard from the MP's staff when you do that?
I have to admit that the twice I've done it, people have been polite but not involved in any way. So I guess we would always hope that we could engage in some kind of discussion, dialogue, talk to people who are around, but yeah, we've been left to our own devices, and eventually the police get called to evict us.
So the MPs generally don't engage,
no,
or they?
No, I think we haven't particularly tried to find times when they were present. We would have been very keen to talk to them, of course, but you know, they're not terribly often, I think, sitting in their office just waiting for people like us to turn up. So, yeah.
And I think that that's something that's taken off around Australia as well.
Yes, it's a movement that's reasonably broad based, and within the church communities. I think it's been a way of the church communities, mainly Christian, actually working together, coming together in solidarity. And I think that's a really good thing.
So is that going to just continue until there's a change in policy?
Probably. I think we need to be creative in terms of, how we actually carry out this non-violent but direct approaches to people who can make a difference. There's no good just keeping on doing the same thing, because what we're doing is trying to get people to listen. We can't force people to listen, but again, we can let people who are seeking asylum know that we're doing this on their behalf, and that's at least some small consolation, maybe. Maybe it gives them a bit of hope. But it also says to members of Parliament who have goodwill that there are people who don't look, I hope they don't look like loony people, just causing disruption. They look like, I hope, ordinary folk who are just trying to make a point. And if we can do that, I hope that they will listen.
Some of my friends who are not Christian have said, well, there's all these Christians who are making, they've noticed that there are all these Christians who are talking about asylum seeker issues, and that there are these people in government and opposition who say that they're Christian but support or perpetuate these policies. Do you think there seems to be a disconnection that they does the fact that there are hundreds and thousands of Christians now arguing against these policies, do you think that would ever make a difference to those to the MPs who say that they're Christian?
I think it can. We don't want to be in a position where we're judging the level of Christianity of different people. We have to take it that people have their own reasons, and hopefully good, conscientious reasons for doing whatever they're doing. But I personally find it hard to say that we're followers of a Jesus whom, even if you take Palm Sunday, I mean, he came into Jerusalem humbly on a donkey, not a war horse. He came with a ragtag group of people who were following him. And they were the people that he actually had kind of always gone out to include, people who were excluded. And it seems to me that asylum seekers, if they'd been around at the time of Jesus, they would have fitted into just that group of people. I hope that gradually people begin to agree with us who are trying to seek justice for these people.
Well, there's elements of the refugee experience in Jesus' life rather than the experience of being in power.
Yes.
And just finally, there's been a few talk in the last few weeks about the sanctuary movement, and I'm not sure of churches offering sanctuary to asylum seekers who may be deported. I'm not sure if any if that's actually been taken up anywhere. Are you aware of that? Or
yes, we're part of that. Two religious congregations have of women have offered also to be part of it, and that's the Josephite Sisters and the Brigidine Sisters that I'm part of, as well as, I think, 107 churches in all. So it's a lot of different places. No one has actually been able, or had to, I suppose, seek sanctuary so far. There's a lot of people among these 267 people who are threatened with deportation back to Manus or Nauru are actually in detention, so they can't seek sanctuary. There are a number in the community, and we hope that they will not be threatened when it comes to the point.
I mean, I'm aware that there's, after the immediate flurry of attention of churches saying that they would offer sanctuary, then there was almost a bit of criticism of those churches that didn't say that. It was almost a sense of pressure that you had to say that. But in my parish, that Sunday after, we had a parish meeting about talking about, well, can we accommodate asylum seekers, and if not, what can we do instead? And my vicar made the point that religious congregations, communities of monks and nuns, are in fact very, very well placed to offer sanctuary, more so than a parish church, since these are, you know, communities accommodating people living there already. Mm. So it's
I think
it's
that's
promising.
True. I think that's true. But the very you know, supportive action of people saying, well, we couldn't actually take somebody in here because there aren't the facilities, but we're absolutely on side with the movement. I mean, that in itself is also a really good thing.
You're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, where we've been talking to Sister Bridget Arthur, and we will come back after break just to round up and talk about, once again, the details of the Palm Sunday rallies. You're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. We've been talking to Sister Bridget Arthur about the Palm Sunday Walk for Justice for Refugees, which is on this Sunday. And Sister Bridget, could you just give us the details about where and when that starts?
Yes, here in Melbourne, we will be gathering for any time. You know, it would be good to come about one. Actually, music will start officially at 1:30, and there's some very good bands and singers. And then we will have some speeches. Some people will speak to us outside the State Library, and then we'll make our way down to the Elizabeth, what did you call
Alexander
them?
Alexander Gardens,
yeah.
Down Swanson Street.
And at the end we will have some more music and a couple more speakers, and we'll wrap up there, I don't know, maybe four, something like that.
Sister Bridget, it's been wonderful having you here, and it's good night from the Spirit Lounge, from myself, Claudine.
And from myself, Rachel. Yep. Don't forget, the Woods are coming up next. We're going to go out with If I Should Fall from Grace with God by the Pogues.
There's your Irish jig.
And we'll end on a little joke that we got sent in. What do you call a nun that's gone walkabout? A Roman Catholic.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.